This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 217 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com. And joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, he is excellent, but he's a little bit froggy, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you, mate?
Well, actually, I'm not sure if I'm either a small horse, or one of those little tiny dogs, the babies of the dogs that pull the sleds along.
A little husky.
I'm either a little husky or a little horse. So excuse my deep voice for the episode.
I'm assuming this is the result of running around like a mad thing for 2 days at your workshop on the weekend.
Well, it's just kind of non-stop talking for 48 hours. Like, literally none. I didn't stop.
Wow.
The poor people. You know, there were tears. There was pain. It was, ears bled. It was just constant.
They really got their money's worth.
Well, I think if you're asking for a discount at the end, kind of a refund, other than that. We had an awesome weekend up on our casting call weekend up in the old film set.
Fantastic. And I saw some of the photos on Facebook. It looked great.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun, a great group, and fortunate weather. You know, yours,
yes,
being outdoors depended upon what nature's going to throw at you, and we were fortunate enough to have clear skies during the night, a little bit of cloud at sunrise and sunset, and moderate temperatures during the day, so you can't complain about that at all.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Yeah, very lucky. So because of that, we got to shoot a lot of the time. You know, we shot 25 out of the 45 hours we were there.
Say again?
We shot 25 out of the 45 hours we were there.
Oh, man, that's going hard.
So not everyone had to shoot, so some people didn't do all of that, but we threw on an impromptu light painting and star trail shoot on the Friday night,
right,
which isn't part of the normal thing. Normally it's just meet and greet, but clear sky, you're not sure if you can get it again, so we went out from 9 till 1.
Oh, wow.
That's after everyone had finished work and driven up there. And so we put on, and then we had to be up again at 6 to shoot the sunrise. So
yep.
And then we shot from 6 till midnight.
Wow.
We stopped for lunch. half an hour. Breakfast half an hour and dinner half an hour. So we shot till midnight and then we're up again at 6.
Wow.
And shot till 4.
Wow.
Just a lot of shooting.
That is a lot of shooting.
I even filled up a memory card, first time in I don't know how many years.
Yeah, right.
Mind you, I did have 8 months worth of events on before it.
Okay.
Yeah, I only shoot JPEGs, so, 16 gig of JPEG. That's a lot of photos.
That is a lot of photos. That's interesting. You only shoot JPEG?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I'm lazy.
Fair enough.
Very, very lazy. It's just a personal choice.
Yeah.
As I say to everyone at my workshops, don't do what I do, do what I say.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I'm just one of those things with RAW, because look, the photos I shoot, they're not for clients, they're not for, most of the shots I do these days are, workshop shoots.
Yeah.
They don't really have a great, it's hard to say, there's not importance, but they don't have a great, there's no real end use for them.
Sure.
So, why take up the space?
Yeah. No, fair enough.
Unless I'm doing there like a landscape that is particularly important to me. I'll pretty rarely go onto RAW file.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, personal choice.
Yeah, all right.
So how's your week been?
My week has been fairly non-eventful.
Excellent. And what are we going to talk about? Thanks for the input there. I thought it was at least 5 minutes we're going to... Yeah.
First up, we were talking last week about photography apps for your phone.
We were.
And one that slipped my mind, and I don't know why I didn't think of this at the time, but another one that I really like, it's available on Android, I'm fairly certain it's available on iOS, and it's also available as a desktop app for your laptop or desktop computer, is the Photographer's Ephemeris.
Ah, yes.
Which is great. I think on Android it was about $6, $5.99 or something. Yeah,
that much.
Yeah, exactly. Hideously expensive.
Maybe they have some of those weekends with a little half price deal. Yes, no, because Jason McCulloch emailed me during the week and said he'd been down to his local op shop, an opportunity shop, and they've been having a $3 in all clothing weekend. And he bought three wedding dresses for $9. So, I mean, for that $6 for an apple, that's two wedding dresses, dude. That's the price of two wedding dresses. That's outrageously expensive.
That's a great idea, picking up wedding dresses at the op shop for...
Absolutely, yeah. When they do stuff like that.
Photo shoots, that's awesome.
Hmm. Incredibly cheap. So so he's already, he reckons he's all ready to do some trash the dresses now. So.
Nice.
As you would be.
Nice. Now, a couple of weeks ago, you were...
Before you go on, the ephemeris, why do you like that specific...
Oh, what the photographer's ephemeris does is give you... the moment you launch the app on your phone, your GPS will automatically lock in on your current position, and it will drop a little push pin onto your Google Map display at your current location. And from that position, it will draw four lines, a yellow line for the angle of sunrise, an orange line for the angle of sunset, a light blue line for the angle of moonrise, and a dark blue line for the angle of moonset. Plus, it will tell you the times that those events will occur. It allows you to then, move forward through the calendar so you can plan, say the next morning shoot or, you might want to plan or you might be looking for a specific angle of the sun, hitting a particular piece of landfall over the ocean or something. You want to line up the rays of the sun with some landmark. Yep. You could then, cycle through the days and find out at what time of the month, or the year, the rays of the sun are going to come over the horizon at exactly the angle that you want to line up with that landmark. So you've got that time-based opportunity to look forward to see what's going to happen. You can also
just quickly, can it actually tell if it's going to be clear that day for it to happen?
Oh man!
Someone can come out with that app.
I would pay for the pro version if it could do
I'm going to throw points for that. I'd double up.
Oh, absolutely. what else does it do? It also offers you the ability to drag the push pin to another location, so you don't actually have to be at the location where you plan to shoot from at the time you're doing your research. I might be sitting at home but want to look at the angle of the sunrise from a specific beach, 15-20 k's from where I am. I can just drag the push pin up the Google Map and drop it on that beach and get all of those lines remapped at that point.
Nice.
It will also show the angle between the horizon and any of these lunar bodies, like your moon, your sun, at the current time of day. But it will also allow you to slide an hour display slider through the different hours of the day to find out at what angle the sun will be, at a given time. So there's all sorts of funky little tools like that. There's a whole bunch more. I just don't know it all off the top of my head.
If it can say to you that, look, what are you standing here for? You should be around the corner. You chose, this is your location. Do you know what's around the bend?
Yeah.
Have you seen that great rock?
Yeah, wouldn't that be good?
Oh, it's like being a mad fisherman that I am. Now, what are you standing at this bend for? You're in the corner, they're going crazy around there. That kind of app, Yeah. Have a look at this. You should look at the photo this guy took last month around the corner. Go there now, it's awesome. Little tips. Now, smart apps.
Mm.
It's the next generation problem.
Absolutely.
We actually used several apps on the weekend, which I thought was fairly timely based on what we talked about. So we used this. Mike Holman was over from New Zealand, as you know.
Yes.
And so we used his Sunseeker app quite a lot.
Right.
Looking at where the sun was going to drop, how it was going to light up the area. So that was quite awesome. But probably the thing I enjoyed using the most was my just the built-in panorama app on the iPhone.
Okay.
Just as a form of pre-visualizing what a shoot's going to look like before setting up and actually shooting it.
Right.
Just a bit of get your phone out, go in just a quick second, find where the optimum place to stand is, what the end result's kind of going to look like, and then setting up your camera to do it in the best spot. So you can do four or five very quick stitch together panoramas.
Yep.
And find which one you're most pleased with, and then set up before you know, it's like you set all the gear up and you're trying to visualize in your head what the shot's going to look like. Well, the iPhone for doing that was fantastic.
Yeah, right. Interesting.
So it was kind of a different way of thinking about shooting panos it's almost like doing a Polaroid back in the old days. You know, you do a quick test Polaroid to see what the shot was like before you went crazy and spent a dollar on a real shot. And so it was really cool. It was a great thing. I also used an app called True HDR. I did quite a few sunset shots. I was too tired to get my camera out. So I just shot with my phone. Yeah, I know. Yeah, something about being 17 hours in with still another prospect, another 5 or 6 to go.
Yeah, right.
Oh, this phone's so nice. But I'll tell you the result now. I've got some up on my Facebook page. Some of the results from the iPhone is astounding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It does have a great camera on it. As much as I bag Apple, the camera on the iPhone is pretty spectacular for what it is.
So we did use quite a few apps over the weekend, which were a lot of fun. And that's the thing, a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what it should be about. Yeah, photography should be fun. This is fun. So
definitely. Now, a couple of weeks ago, you mentioned to me a product called the Storm Jacket.
I did. Which is awesome piece of kit.
Yeah, which is a piece of kit designed to keep your camera out of the torrential rain when you're in, tropical monsoons. I happened to stumble across an article on DIYphotography.net, which was titled "The Easiest Camera Rain Jacket Ever," and all these guys had done was got maybe a 20-25 centimeter long stretch of Gore-Tex waterproof fabric that was maybe 15-20 centimeters wide, laid it over the top of the camera, maybe stuck an inch of the fabric out beyond the end of the lens, and then slid a rubber band over the top of the fabric and around the barrel of the lens, and so that just holds the Gore-Tex in place over the barrel of the lens, and then the back end of the fabric just splays out over the top of the body of the camera. And I thought, how simple is that? You know, you don't have to worry about the whole body of the camera being in an enclosed environment like a Ziploc bag, and therefore you don't have any condensation issues because, it's in the same environment that you're shooting in, as it were. So I thought, I'm going to give that a go. So, yeah.
And?
Well, I haven't yet. No. I only discovered this a couple of days ago.
Where are you going to find the Gore-Tex?
Well, the article said that you can find people selling the fabric on eBay. So that is on my to-do list to jump on eBay. But I'm also going to go and just check out, we've got a couple of fabric shops at the local shopping centre, so I'll pop in there and just see if they have any. It doesn't have to be Gore-Tex, but as long as it was waterproof, I guess it would do the job. But if they don't, then I'll check eBay as well. So,
well, as you know, I am thinking of renaming my company name to The World's Laziest Photographer. And I think both of those things, A, finding Gore-Tex, B, appropriate size rubber bands, is way too much beyond the level of input I'm prepared to put into a project. Whereas hitting order right. A storm jacket online,
it's much easier.
It takes all the pressure off too. Plus it's got that nice logo down the side, they're still professional now.
Fair enough.
So each to their own, you handyman people. Yeah. I don't know why my handyman, the teacher of my woodworking class, kicked me out after only 1 week. No idea why. I think it was like, we had to make a pencil case, not just when I bought one.
And he wouldn't give you marks for that? That's just rough. We got an email from Erin King this week, and I'll read it out. I thought it was very interesting. Hi, Bruce and Glenn. Not sure if this is something you would consider covering in a podcast, but I've got a situation.
And we're not, so thanks for the email, Erin, and let's go on to the next piece. Oh, you want, yes, you want to cover it.
But I've got a situation which is quite complex, and while I'm not looking for any legal advice or anything like that, I would like to know your take on the issue at hand. My sister and her now husband were persuaded into buying a huge photography package from a certain business who shall remain nameless. It was worth several thousands of dollars, think five figures. To make a long story short, my sister and brother-in-law needed to enter into a payment plan with the business to pay this stuff off. Their wedding was February of last year, so 2012, so this has been an ongoing thing. They were due to have paid off the photographs by around late 2014, so we're talking a good 2.5 years to pay off their wedding photos. Here's the problem. The head of the business has passed away unexpectedly a few months ago. My sister only recently found this out because they followed up with the business due to not receiving any receipts for the payments they'd been making. They were told to stop paying and that the business has gone into some sort of liquidation or administration and may or may not be sold. Basically, things are at a standstill. My sister and her husband have been told that it may be up to the new owner, if any, whether or not the package my sister had ordered will be fulfilled, if at all. Considering the great deal of money they've already paid, should they be entitled to at least get their photos, let alone the albums, prints, etc., from the current folks running the business? Would they have any recourse of the new owners, or if the new owners don't want to follow through, should they? What do you think the photography business itself should do? Because obviously there are other couples who are affected by this too. Work has already been done on my sister's photos, so personally speaking, I don't think it'd be too much effort to fulfill at least some of the package now. Again, not looking for legal advice, as I'm already looking into that on their behalf. Just your personal take on what should or shouldn't happen. Obviously, it's a crappy situation for all involved. Cheers, Aaron
Especially
King.
Especially for the dead guy.
Well, yes.
For him especially. He's,
yes.
He's had the hardest time of all, I'd imagine.
Yes, absolutely.
When you think about it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad she doesn't want legal advice, you know, because that's a tough situation. What are your thoughts?
I would like to think that there is somebody still managing that business, even if the principal has passed away, that surely he has a spouse or maybe a business partner. I mean, a business partner would be preferable, but even if it was his spouse, I would like to think that there is someone who is looking after the wrapping up of that business or the preparation of selling that business. And that whoever that person is needs to man up and take responsibility for an agreement that was entered into, and either, as Aaron suggests towards the end of the letter, at least deliver on the work that's already been done up to, you know, the value of whatever has been paid so far, then, I don't know, perhaps renegotiate a deal whereby they would supply to Aaron's sister and brother-in-law, you know, just basic digital files that they could take somewhere else to get albums made or to get enlargements made if they're not prepared to follow through with that part of the job. Yeah, I don't know. It's a tricky one.
It's the problem not knowing who they are, because all those assumptions are that there is someone left.
Yeah.
Now, if it is just a spouse who had almost no involvement with the day-to-day running the business, doesn't really understand what's actually involved, she's probably put in the too hard basket.
Sure.
It's all too hard. Let's just, dealing with what she has to deal with.
Yeah.
And it may be that, you know, with some gentle contact, it may be possible to say, look, you know, can I just have access to the digital files?
Yeah.
And if you at least get the files, at least you've got, you know, something to work with.
Yeah.
You know, that might be the first port of call to say, look, I understand you're in this, this is a terrible time for you in many ways. How about I take the responsibility of this job off your hands, and depending on how much they're paid, whether they're prepared to sacrifice that to get the images. Because the money's probably gone. in all reality.
Given that they contacted, quote, the business, unquote, to find out why they weren't receiving, receipts for the money that they were periodically paying, and were told by somebody to stop making payments, then obviously there is somebody...
Yeah, the wife saying, don't send any more money, well, I don't know what to do.
Yeah,
because whoever it is not there sending any receipts out for that payment. They're accepting the payments coming in.
Yeah.
Which is
the
problem.
Well, I mean, it could be that that Aaron's sister and brother-in-law are just doing a bank transfer, in which case the receiving party's got no choice about receiving the money.
Yeah, but they've been receiving it and not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
Hasn't been monitored to the point, we should tell these people to stop sending us money. Yeah. We should contact these people to say what's happened.
Yeah.
It came down to her, and that's what concerns me. It came down to her having to contact them.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel, we don't know who these people are. It's a very difficult situation. I said the only thing I would try to do is do whatever possible to get access to the digital files.
Yeah. If it was just a grieving widow, then it's quite conceivable she's looked at the bank statement and gone, I've received money from this party, but I don't know who they are or how to contact them.
Or why she may think they've already got their goods and they're just paying something off. Yeah, never necessarily.
Yeah, there's so many up-in-the-air variables with it, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that to me, if it wasn't me in that situation, I'd be striving to say, just get me the files. Take all the responsibility out of your hands, just get me those files, and you'd have to wear the money loss.
Yeah. I'd be suggesting, if that's what the case is, Ren, that it's just a grieving widow who's handling the mess that's been left, that perhaps you get in touch and say, look, I am the sister of, this couple who had a deal with your dearly departed. I am a professional photographer and an accomplished Photoshop, user. Would you be prepared to give me access to the files so that I can at least deliver, the work that has been paid for by my sister and brother-in-law? It's worth a shot. I mean, you can only ask, you can only ask.
And it's a lesson for young players. I mean, where's the contract? What does the contract state?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you don't go into this sort of massive dollar value investment without some protection for both parties.
Yeah, totally.
The contract's not there to tie one person in. It's to protect both people from any possible situation, non-payment by the end user or... carking it by
or non-delivery from the service provider. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a terrible situation, but I think a gently approach, if it hasn't already been done, is not a bad way to start.
Yeah. The other thing I would say too, Aaron, if you or your sister has been able to get in touch with whoever it is that's handling the affairs for this photography business, if you can. I don't know how open they're going to be to sharing that kind of information, but if you can find out if there is a likely buyer for the business, find out whether or not that buyer is going to be aware of, outstanding commitments like, your sister and brother-in-law, and are they going to honour, the existing, again, I'll use the term loosely, contract, because we don't know if there was one.
Exactly. Yeah.
You would hope that if someone was going to walk in and say, okay, well, I'll take over the name of this business and I'll pick up the client database, that they would also then, pick up the responsibility to, finish off the delivery of any, undelivered or unfinished projects. So, that comes down to whether or not there is actually a buyer in the market for that business.
Yeah, and that's in this day and age, it's kind of hard to say. Yeah. So, immediate, gentle approach and find out where the lay of the land is, I guess, is the best thing. Because it's kind of hard to know where it would fall legally if there's no contract, legally, if no goods have been provided. If they've already paid for the service, they've already had the service, the guy was there to shoot the photos.
Look, I would say, as Glenn has said, obviously take the very gentle approach, as an opening gambit, and hopefully, you will meet with some success on that front. If not, If the payments have been made via some sort of traceable mechanism like internet banking, then your sister and brother-in-law do at least have bank statements that can prove that they have made payments to this business. So if it does, you know, if the negotiations go completely pear-shaped and they have to go legal, they can at least say, well, here is the proof of all of the payments that we made over, you know, 18 months or however long it's been, to say, you know, we've paid X amount, however many thousands that may represent. You know, we are at least entitled to, you know, let's just pick some raw numbers out of our bum. Let's say they've paid $2,000 out of what was a $10,000 contract, then they should legally be able to say, well, we are at least entitled to 1/5 of what we paid for, you know, yeah. or what we had agreed to buy. You know, even if the other, you know, 80% is not going to be delivered, we are at least entitled to 20% of what we had agreed on.
Yeah.
But hopefully
forego that 20% for the files.
Oh, yeah.
With all the files, you could do 100% yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Yeah, and in the end of the day, you're making it easier for them, and that may be something they're prepared to, yeah, if you can make it, if you can solve a problem for someone, rather than give someone a problem, you know, maybe it's the quickest way out of something.
That's a great point. Yeah. And particularly to, you know, if it is just the grieving widow, then yes, she will be, you know, glad for anyone who's there to help solve a problem for her. So
All the added stress taken out. So not knowing the intricate details of the situation, that's not a bad way of looking at it. Try and solve the problem for them and, you know, see where it takes you.
Yeah. Now, something I'm going to try as a bit of an experiment. I've tried it during this episode, and I probably should have pre-promoted the idea a little sooner, but I'll mention it now so that next week maybe we'll get a little more interaction. But what I'm going to do from now on is, as Glyn and I are recording this podcast, which generally happens on a Tuesday night, Australian time, I'm going to have my Facebook account open, and I'll be watching the Shutters Inc. podcast page, and I'll put up a post, as I have done this week, saying, about to start recording episode 217 with Glyn, got a question? Flick it here in the comments and we'll try and answer it on the fly. We have got one response.
We do. It's awesome.
Yes.
I've got the answer too.
Adam Davidson wants to know, what camera settings do I need to use to take awesome photos all the time?
It's a very simple answer.
P?
No, the right ones.
Oh. I thought you were going to say P for professional. Put it into P mode.
The right one for the situation you're in. And for the type of photo you're trying to take. It's a very simple question and a very simple answer. Thanks for that, Adam. I appreciate the feedback. Yeah, how long is a piece of string? Well, it's twice half its length.
That's right.
These questions are easy to solve, but we can't look. And whilst it was out there as a bit of a joke, thanks, Adam. it always comes in. People are always asking me, you know, what ISO should I use? What aperture should I use? And it'll just, that people have no, you know, a lot of people have no understanding or idea. I mean, as a person who trains photographers, you see this all the time.
Yeah,
and the biggest, whilst it sounds silly, the right ones or the ones necessary is actually the right answer. What ISO should I use? Well, the one you need to.
Yeah.
What aperture should I use? Well, the one you need to.
Yeah.
What shutter speed should it be? The one that's needed to do the job.
It gets me how often you see, you know, you post a photo and people go, oh man, that's awesome. What ISO did you shoot that at? Or what aperture did you shoot? It's like, what does it matter?
Yeah. And it's... I understand where people are coming from with the question, but, you know, if a little bit of common sense and a bit of thought would say, okay, well, I'll look at the image. Well, let's say it's a portrait.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the background's blurred, so therefore it must have been a low number. Mm. How low? Who cares? Low enough to do the job.
Yeah.
If it's a sports shot and the subject's frozen, how fast a shutter speed did you use? Well, as fast as it needed to stop them. Slower, if they were blurry, it's too slow.
Yeah.
And you can't over-freeze someone. So if you... If you're using a speed that's too fast, well, it doesn't really matter, you know. Just that stopping and thinking about shots. And this happened a lot over the weekend. You know, it was the casting call weekend was, it just over and over again. Just you get tired and you forget to think about simple solutions to stuff. Whatever it's got to be is what it's got to be, you know. Yeah. And with the ISO, my standard response to that is the lowest number possible where you can still get the shot.
Yeah.
Regardless of how good your camera is at doing high ISO and low light, yeah, and with no noise, always get away with the lowest one you can.
Yep.
And start shooting.
Yep.
And if you can sort of keep that into your mindset, I guess, when you're shooting, what do I need to use? Well, what's the right thing for the shot? What's the story about? What am I trying to tell in the story? What's important? What settings do I need to make that happen? So thanks, Adam. That's a very smart question. Or was that a smart ass question? but it's a great talking point, and I do love discussing because
And the interesting thing is that. Like coming back to what you're saying about ISO, shooting at the lowest ISO you can get away with, it's not always a case that, you might be able to get a shot at 200 ISO, but the shot you want requires 800 ISO because of the aperture and shutter speed required.
Exactly.
It's not always that, you're just going to be using the lowest ISO that will allow a correct exposure, because not every correct exposure is exactly the image you're chasing.
Exactly. Anyway. It's a great thing to always be thinking about.
Yeah.
We tend to go and not think about our numbers enough. Yeah. We tend to be shooting without paying enough attention to our numbers.
Oh, I'm guilty of that.
Yeah. Look, we all are. We all are. That we have moments where we just do stupid stuff.
Yeah.
And shoot, and we get excited, which is great. We're doing something we want to do, and it's fun, and it's awesome, and that's all fantastic. But at some point, you've got to disengage just for a second and make sure you're not doing something stupid.
I think that's one of the curses of the digital era.
Yes.
When it was film, I think you were far more thoughtful about your approach, or at least I know I was. Where with digital, you just tend to go, oh yeah, snap, 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 and then start chimping and then go, oh, clown, you were supposed to shut your aperture down, or you were supposed to do this on that, and then you dial it in and you get it right, but I think, I know I'm a shocker for that. I really need to spend more time actually looking at what the picket fence is doing before I press the shutter and look at the image and then go, I should have done that.
In my understanding of camera workshops, I have a five-stage process of shooting.
Right.
That I teach about when shooting a manual. There's five steps to shooting.
Yep.
And the last one is basically stop and check your, the second last one, stop and check your numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can fall into a habit of shooting, and that shooting is, basically it's the first step one is set your ISO. You've got to tell your camera where you're shooting, what kind of conditions you're shooting in.
Yeah.
Step two's got to be, decide what the photo is about.
Yep.
Is it about time? Is it about depth? And if you're in manual, you adjust the other one to get your exposure right.
Yep.
Stop and check your numbers. Mm-hmm. And if the numbers are no good, bump up your, change your ISO. If you can just follow that process, it stops you. That's that little, for that fraction of a second, to make sure you're not doing a stupid thing.
Yeah.
And a stupid thing can be different for different people. For me, under 1/100th of a second of shutter speed, I'm going to have a high percentage of unsteady shots.
Yeah, right.
Because I don't have steady hands. So for me, geez, you're under 100, Glenn, watch out. Be aware at least.
Yep.
It makes me aware that I've got to make sure my shooting stance, my way I'm breathing, how I'm holding my camera, all that sort of stuff is a little bit more focused upon.
Yep.
So it's different for everybody where you're at with that. But if you can follow those steps all the time, you tend not to, not fall off the perch quite so often.
and I guess the reality is that most of the people who ask those questions, like, oh, awesome shot, what aperture, what ISO, blah blah blah, are probably people who are, much earlier in their journey and are still trying to get their head around how those three things fall into alignment with each other, between ISO, shutter speed, and aperture.
Exactly. There's a relationship between the three.
Yes.
Damn, I've got to change my whole process of shooting. I think we've got, as I mentioned, the age of digital. We don't think about ISO in that step anywhere near as much as we used to.
No.
You know, we used to have to choose the film we were going to put in the camera.
Yeah.
And that sucker was in there until we finished.
That's
so we
right.
We always knew that in the back of our mind. These days, you know, it's...
You just change on the fly, yeah.
Yeah, and you're not necessarily thinking about it as much. It's not sort of as forefront of the mind as it used to be. So you can understand that too.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Fun times.
I've got a couple of things to chat about.
Yeah.
I've been looking at some harrowing but amazing images from Syria. Yeah, Syria in amazingly destitute ruins at the moment. Yeah, you know, you hear about the conflict in Syria on the TV all the time, and I guess you kind of become a little bit, you know, blinkered and just don't kind of gather the impact it has on the people there.
Yep.
But the Atlantic.com, their in-focus section this week's got a whole series of amazing shots in Syria, called Syria in Ruins.
Right.
And it's certainly brought home just how incredibly destructive this war is being over there. It's not just some sort of little civil war or some little, you know, bit of a fight between some small groups. It's really quite destructive. So that's maybe something if people want to have a little bit of a look at and get a bit of a feel for.
For sure.
I also saw this week, I saw this morning actually, that 2,000 studios in the US closed this week. One company that owned 2,000 studios shut them all down.
Wow.
And do you know who they blamed?
The...
Not mums, the Syrians.
Mums with cameras?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, the mumpreneurs, as I like to call them.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. They're mumpreneurs. They're out there trying to make a good on them. So my wife's trying to do the same thing, find a niche in the things she's interested in, to find a way to feed the family. And good on all those people. I'm all for that. And this mega corporation losing out, well, it's probably a soulless mega corporation versus a mum who cares.
Yeah.
I don't know which way... I don't know which way I'd rather go. Gee, you know that for a while. So whilst it sounds terrible, 2,000 studios closing down, if it is because of these home businesses that are doing really well, well, fantastic.
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting. But one thing came up in one of our 25 to 45 hours of chatting on the weekend was, what do we do with our memory cards as far as making sure they don't, go corrupt on us.
Oh, okay.
And so I found this thing about some tips about how to look after your card, and one that I'd never thought about before that Mr. Mike Holman brought up, and now makes perfect sense, but it just never really sunk in my head before. So I thought I'd go through them.
Yeah.
First, as soon as you buy a memory card, format it.
Format it. Yeah.
Yeah. But not everyone does. Yeah. Here's the thing. Only ever use the same memory card and the same camera.
Hang on, before we move on to that, the formatting in the camera, yeah, okay.
Yes, but in the camera you intend to use it in, format in the camera. So it's known how that camera likes to work as data, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah. But use only in the same camera. So if you've got more than one camera, don't swap memory cards between cameras.
And if you do, then format the card first.
Yeah, unless they recommend not doing that.
Oh, really?
They say, look, this is. I guess it's a bit like rechargeable batteries. You only want to charge them in their own groups. They say, look, if you want the absolute safest way of looking after a memory card, is for camera A, and only if it gets formatted in camera A, and you'll never use it in camera A.
Yeah.
So a memory's so cheap, I got no problem with that.
Yeah, I think it sounds a little bit like overkill. Personally,
yeah, but
that'd be like using a USB key in one particular computer.
You know, if it's going to save my images, potentially, I don't mind. You know, a 32 gig card these days is $20. You know?
Yeah,
it's not a hardship to do that.
Yeah,
you know, so it's not like back in the days when the first memory card I bought was 2 megabyte and cost me $800. You're very careful how you use that sucker. But simple things like keeping them in the storage cases, the little plastic storage cases that it comes with.
Yep.
Yeah, just to stop them getting scratched, or in the case of a CF card, little grains of sand or anything getting up inside the holes. And that makes a lot of sense. But You know, I know I've just thrown mine in my pocket all the time, yep. which is why they end up in the washing machine all the time, but still. it's amazing how they keep working after the washing machine, though, I don't know.
Well, it keeps them nice and clean, mate.
It does. Wash it. It's how you clean it. I don't format, I wash. excuse me. Going for multiple mid-sized cards rather than one big one.
Oh, yeah, now, absolutely.
And you found that, but we've talked about that before.
Yep. No, I don't shoot with anything bigger than an 8 gig card.
Yeah. I 16 for me, but right. I've 4 or 5 16 gigs that I keep on hand all the time, and yeah.
Yep.
It's a good one. But here's another one that I've sort of considered. Don't use cheap card readers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so apparently, and look, yeah, who knows, it's on the internet, so it could either be 100% accurate or 100% who knows what. But it kind of makes sense, you know, the way they pull data off the card. Is it necessarily in the best possible way?
Okay.
But here's the one that I like from Mike Holman the most. Never delete a photo on your camera.
Why?
Because of the way remembering that they don't actually delete anything. Yeah, all it does is remove the protection points on the image, so the data is still actually there.
Yes.
Because it just leaves all those corrupt bits of data all over the place. And that's what causes cards to go stupid on you, is these bits of data all over the place getting confused.
Okay, so I guess that's the card-based equivalent of a fragmented hard drive.
So, you know, get them on your computer, delete them. But keep them on your card. And once again, as you said, storage is cheap. So, you know, why go delete 4 photos off the card if you don't need to, you know? And, you know what it's like. Sometimes I've deleted photos that I thought, oh, you know, maybe I should have kept that. You know, it wasn't that bad.
I guess I delete images in camera simply because I go, okay, that's complete and utter crap. I don't want that clogging up my hard drive at home.
Yeah, but that's when you delete it on your computer rather than on the card. So, you know, when you go through and rate them on Lightroom or whatever you're using.
Yeah, but if you're coming home from a 3-week road trip to Western Australia, you know, with thousands of images, you don't want to be sitting there going, now, where are the crap ones that I wanted to get rid of? I'd rather just do it on the fly.
But what if you lost all those thousands of images because of that? I'm sitting here looking at 4 cards yesterday and one of them doesn't work for some reason.
Yeah, right.
I don't know why. It was working. It took 6 shots and then stopped working.
Wow. Okay.
Why? I don't know. Yeah, but it just decided it didn't want to record anymore. So that's something I'm going to take into practice. And in fact, on the weekend after we discussed that, every time I took it, you know, all the time when I was taking bad shots, it was like, well, there's 6 bad ones for 1 good one. Oh, I better keep the 6 bad ones on until I get home. It just kind of made sense, you know, to do that. So, and with me, if things make sense, I'll probably tend to do them. So, knowing that, you know, how data isn't actually deleted and how it throws all these bits of data all over the place,
mm-hmm.
It's not a bad way of not a bad way of living, I think. So,
there's
six plus one ways of maybe protecting your cards. Doesn't mean we have to agree with them, but yeah, we should be thinking about it.
Yeah, definitely.
So when I look at this, there's only 6 photos on the card that don't work, that doesn't work, but I can't ever get them. Nothing I've ever put them into can even recognise there's a card there.
Oh, really?
Every camera, every card reader, every rescue software.
Wow.
There's only six photos of my daughter.
Yeah, right.
And it died during the take, so I just put another card in and started. So I've got similar shots.
Yeah.
But what if I couldn't?
Yeah, right.
I don't know why it died. Yeah, is it my mission? At least I know if I get a little bit anal about stuff and do things like this,
yep,
I've covered as many bases as I have control over.
Yeah, right.
Maybe that's a good thing.
So you got anything else you're going to cover before we finish off, Glenn?
I do.
Oh, what's that?
Do you want to know?
I do.
I'm building the suspense. Is it working?
Yes, mate, absolutely.
Yeah, the last item's got to be good.
Of course it does.
In this case, it's not, but no. I've heard of this particular website before.
Right.
And it's one of those things you hear about.
Called Flickr.
it's called Google.
Right.
Alta Vista. You hear it at the time, you go, oh, that's amazing. And then you probably forget all about it.
Oh, that happens all the time.
Yeah. And also, what happens to me all the time is I hear about a website, then I forget about it. Has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, deja vu. So
this guy in the US,
yeah,
I was having a party with some friends over, and the next morning when he was cleaning up, his camera was missing. Gonski.
Right.
So what he did is he looked all around the house. He checked with all his friends that he knew were there.
Yeah.
And, as far as you could tell, none of those told, but some of them brought friends. So he figured, there's no point asking the police because they're not going to do anything for me.
No.
So he looked up on Craigslist.
Yep.
And funnily enough, the very first item on Craigslist was his camera gear for sale. So what he did, he said, well, I need to find out for sure if it's my camera.
Yep.
And says, but, you know, I don't know where the information is for serial numbers. I've got no idea.
Yep.
So he went to a website called stolencamerafinder.com.
Wow.
And what it is you can upload a photo that you took with your camera. It will search the EXIF data, find your details, but then it goes even better. It then searches the internet and finds if anyone's actually using that camera and posting photos of that camera, and will tell you where they are and who they are.
Wow. That is awesome.
Pretty darn cool, hey?
That is awesome.
So this guy used the photos. This guy, what the guy who stole the camera did, he'd taken some photos to post up with the list. Say, look at the photos the camera can take.
Yeah, right.
And he's used that cross-matched the images the guy put up with his own images. Took that to the police. Wow. They had undercover cops in the room when the guy came to try and sell the camera to him. And
yep.
Bang. Fantastic. So the stolencamerafinder.com.
That is awesome. Cool. I will definitely put a link to that in the show notes. That's great.
Yeah, so we finished on a high, dude.
Yeah, totally.
That's the first.
Excellent. All right, so what do you got on for this week?
Two workshops and school holidays with my daughter.
Right. Fantastic. Mind you,
I'm looking after Miss 2-year-old who decided to pull a chair down on her leg yesterday and dislocate her small toe.
Ow.
She's being a bit of a koala at the moment, and she hangs on and can't put her down.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
A little bit sad. Wailing, I split it open, blood everywhere.
Dear, oh dear.
Kids, who'd have them?
Yeah.
There's always something. So that's my week, yeah. Daddy daycare and a couple of workshops.
Fantastic.
And yes, and sorting through the 17,000 images I took at casting call.
I can imagine.
Which did I happen to mention, or by mention I mean pimp out, the fact that casting call 3 is about to be announced and...
Fantastic.
It's going to be on, it's going to be in late October. We're going to go back to the old film set and do it all over again.
Awesome. And of course, the good thing about that was it'll be a completely different time of year, which means it'll be a completely different look.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
It's... Or the sun will be in different spots and all sorts of things will be happening. And so it's going to be very cool. So we're doing that again and a couple of other big announcements I'm working on for other big trips. So lots of stuff in the pipes. So as soon as kids get back to school, I can start doing some work again.
Now, when are you off to India?
As soon as I get my passport.
Oh, you're still waiting. Okay.
Still waiting.
Right.
As soon as I get my passport, I'm out of here. Yeah.
Fair enough.
So as soon as that sucker shows up, I'm just gone and just jump out for a few days and
cool.
Come back and see how it all goes from there.
Fantastic.
See what damage I can put in myself in a few days in India.
Excellent. All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
You too. Bye, everybody.
I'll talk to you next week. See you, mate.
Love you a long time.
Shutters Inc., another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email thevoice@shuttersincpodcast.com.